So I'm Joe Santana, I'm here from Theme, and I'll be doing a presentation on implementation best practices and considerations. Now, throughout all these great presentations, we've heard lots of big acronyms, very detailed information on tags, etc., etc. I'm going to try and do a small amount of that, but give you some real explanations in terms of what I've seen on real US migrations that have taken place over the last two and a half years. Okay, so that will be later on. But what I will look at is the integration of EMV into merchant environments, and looking at it as obviously it being a very different prospect to the Magstripe implementations. It has broader and more wide impacts that touch many participants within that ecosystem. It requires a true understanding of that wider environment. Planning and EMV skills are vital for success for projects. We've heard that there's a lot of documentation that you need to read, a lot of skills that I suppose you're going to have to acquire along the road. But don't be afraid, there are organizations out there that have a lot of knowledge, provide lots of help, have great tools that can assist you in this as well. And then the aim of this session is to review the wider context of a merchant EMV implementation from development and testing perspectives. I know that Derek later on is going to go into those certification and testing phases, but I'll be touching upon those as well. Because at the end of the day, as a lot of our colleagues have mentioned, Aidan especially and Umesh, you know, this testing phase is iterative. And you've got to understand that by doing this in a cyclical manner, you're going to get a better and better solution to the point where when you get to your certification, everything should hopefully go well. I'll also be looking at considerations for merchant projects from the VAR perspective. And then finally, as I mentioned before, some best practices for merchant projects. So that's really what I've seen in terms of the real EMV migrations across all the brands that a lot of your competitors, colleagues, people that are in this room, people that are not in this room, who actually have gone through this process, and some of those stumbling blocks. So these are the typical issues that we see time and time again. And it's these issues that if you can kind of have these highlighted to you and understand that it's an area of concern, hopefully you'll be able to sort of nail that on the head and not stumble upon those issues later on when you come across these points. So I'll try not to be derogatory at all, because I know there's a lot of experience in here. You guys create your solutions, and I'm not saying that you don't know what you're doing. It's more a case of just rehashing a little bit more and saying, look, be aware that there's a wider impact. You know, you're experts in your field in terms of what you do, but just be aware that EMV will have an impact on this. And it's just a case of highlighting that. So this diagram shows the payment solution environment, I suppose, all the different actors that play within here. And truly, what we're trying to say here is you've got a contactless chip transaction profile that you're going to be looking at, contact chip transaction profiles, the Magstripe transaction profiles. All of these will coexist, depending, obviously, if you do go contactless or not. You also have to be aware of, obviously, the acquiring end-to-end operation, how the issuing operation will take place, and the authorization element of this. So EMV requires all participant systems to operate correctly. And throughout this process of creating your solutions to the point of understanding what the certification will have in terms of an impact on you, we always say, look at it from that perspective. Look at it from the certification perspective, understanding the brand requirements, understanding what the rules and requirements that each of these brands have produced, these huge documents, full of information, lots of detail, explaining exactly how you are supposed to code your products to support and to accept EMV transactions on those products, understanding that at the end of all that, you're going to have certification. You're going to be certifying potentially your hosts. A lot of the big hosts have been already certified, which is great, if not all. But there are different levels of certification. So be aware of those requirements, because it will have a huge impact on you later on. And we'll come back to that later on. There's a sentence here that our people like to mention, and that's that the transaction profiles, even though they use the same rails, it's better that they are evaluated separately. Okay, so don't get bogged down into thinking this is just a huge box where just, you know, this is all going to take place. Yeah, sure, it is going to take place, but understand that there are separate streams, and each of those need to be taken care of. I remember a colleague, one of us mentioned it earlier, you still need to take care of your magstripe processing. That's not going to go away. So be aware that just because you're doing your EMV migration, it doesn't mean you need to switch off, as it were, on any of the other rails. And then the merchant systems need to be built to acquiring specifications, the network and brand rules, and then of course not challenging or changing the EMV code rules for the products that you're going to be acquiring or producing, depending on your level of expertise. Continuing to look at the payment system context, we start looking at the different levels that are often mentioned throughout different presentations. You'll read a lot about this, and maybe you're not totally aware of the different levels. So I just wanted to kind of do a recap on this. Okay, so when we're talking about level one, we're referring to EMV code level one. So we're looking at the hardware. Okay, now as we mentioned before, a lot of this hardware is going to be bought. It's going to go to laboratories that certify these products, and that hardware is going to be already certified. From your perspective, if you're in that decision-making arena or within any discussion on choosing systems that are approved, you have to ensure that the product that's being used is approved by EMVCO. The second part is level two, and that is really the software that drives the EMV processing. Okay, again, that's certified by the laboratories. There are lots of products out there that are certified. We mentioned before, you've got expiration dates for these products. But not only do you have to be aware of choosing or being told, I suppose, that's another possibility, which level two kernel you're going to use, it's ensuring that if you're in that dialogue with your merchant or your customer, ensuring they understand exactly what configuration they're going to use, and understanding what the impacts are on their business requirements. Remember, there are lots of kernels out there that are approved. Within the umbrella of a level two certification, there are specific configurations within there that have different capabilities switched on and off. And we always say this when we visit the customers, ensure that you choose the correct configuration for your business plan, idea, project that you're doing at that time. The third level, which is now being deemed and called and phrased as level three testing, is the acquirer and brand certification testing. Okay, so this is the bit that you'll have to do when you start hearing phrases such as ADVDT, MTIP, DPAS, E2E, and the American Express version. You're going to have to go through the different brand certifications depending on which brands you and your customers decide they're going to want to support. So, level three requirements are defined by each payment network, and they are very well defined. There's a very good white paper that is available on the EMF website where all the brands, a lot of the vendors participated and created a one-shot document if your scared, I suppose, of looking at the extensive documentation that is available from the brands. Now, I know it can be a scary prospect having to read a lot of documentation in a short space of time, but this white paper is a good, concise document that will really give you a very well pointing direction, as it were, finger for you to know where to get the documentation from, get the latest versions, and understanding what will impact you in terms of what you're going to have to do. Level 3 certification also involves implementation, configuration, testing, and certification. I've mentioned all of these, and I will mention them a little later on. It's always just good to reiterate, because a lot of people, and I've heard this comment this week quite a few times, which was a bit scary, I've bought my device, it's EMVCO level 1 and level 2 certified, so surely I'm okay. I just have to switch it on. No. I wish it was that simple. Yes, you've got an approved product, but we reiterate what I've mentioned about level 3 testing. Don't forget, you then have to integrate that solution into the environment in which it's going to be used. So then you're going to be doing your level 3 testing. This will include not only the brand testing, but any acquirer-specific testing that the acquirers will mandate, even for today, for your magstripe testing. You know, we all know that there is the magstripe testing that takes place. Well, add that to the certification process, because that's going to continue. And then finally, the last point, level 3 certification involves VARs, ISVs, merchant activity with acquirers and processors. The point here is it's all about communication and dialogue, okay? Don't feel that you're on your own here, okay? I suppose you could add to that the vendors, okay? Because at the end of the day, we're here to support you guys. So, in terms of the merchant context and merchant EMV migration, this slide is really looking at saying it's a wide impact migration project. Each merchant situation is going to be different. Small merchants may not have to worry extensively about all of these areas. The bigger solutions, the bigger customers, the bigger projects will. And we're seeing a consistent view of how project planning and looking at and reviewing your business strategy can really facilitate what happens in terms of what you're going to be scoping. And the impact assessment and gap analysis of what it is that you are and are not going to support in these projects. Implementation planning and component selection is also important. As we mentioned before, you've got contact and contactless on the table. Whether you go for both will obviously be driven by what your merchant or your customers are going to really want. And understanding that each of these needs to be planned accordingly. Something I should have mentioned earlier, and I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but, and I know Derek will probably mention this, but there are different certifications required for contact and contactless. It's not a case of if you certify your product from a contact perspective, then you can just plug your contactless reader in and off you go and you can accept contactless transactions. That's not the case. So be aware, depending on the components that you select for your project, all of these things have an impact downstream. System implementation and pre-testing. This harks onto a very good slide that Aidan had. I know a few of us have already mentioned it, and Umesh also mentioned it. This idea of code, fix, test, code, test, code, test. It may sound boring, it may sound overkill, but you'll be very surprised how many people say, well, you know, we saw the specs, we saw the requirements, we did the testing, we passed about 80% of the tests, so we thought, right, we're ready to do the certification. How hard can it be? Yes, indeed. Those are the projects that tend to take 9-10 months. People disappear, they come back, they disappear again, they come back. they disappear, they tell us they've changed their products, maybe it was the kernel they selected, that could probably be it, yep, that probably fixes the issue. Redo the testing in exactly the same manner, and then we're in the same boat again. Thankfully, that hasn't happened in the US, but it has happened in other places. And I'm not just saying, you know, a lot of people will say in the less developed regions of the world, you'll be surprised. You know, these are stories we're talking about that come out of places like Europe, okay, where, you know, everybody kind of looks at places like the UK, France, as being sort of, you know, pioneers in this. Okay, yes, they've done it, they're doing it, but, you know, errors were made. And now when you look at these acquiring institutions, as an example, who do perform lots of certifications, they have huge teams of people, or even smaller teams of people, but they have specific roles within that organization. And one of those roles is effectively a pre-certification phase, which goes through this iterative process with software houses. So it's trying to kind of employ that idea. A lot of you may already have pre-certification concepts you use today, but it's really saying that from an EMV perspective, pre-testing is almost key. It goes hand in hand with that phrase of the most recent up-to-date documentation. Looking at the connection to the acquirer and processor is obviously important, because that will, you know, that will really trigger a lot of what is required in terms of the testing that you're going to be doing later on. The impact of what each of those acquirer protocols are. Are you going to process to all of them? You've already got relationships with some of them. What are the impacts in terms of your messaging that you already have? You know, this infamous field, or DE55, that we keep hearing about, you know, it's real. You're going to have to sort of take that on board. Certification testing, I'm going to skip. I've already said enough about that for now, and I'm going to say a bit more after. And then deployment. Think about the deployment. Think about what a lot of customers do, which is to restrict the deployment to small areas. You know, a lot of big acquirers have decided to do sort of pilots in, you know, staff canteens, so they can really look at the data that comes back from that, checking sort of to see if there are any lessons that can be learnt from that deployment. It's a good idea. It really is. It will maybe sort of open your eyes to issues that you may possibly not have thought about previously. Other merchant project considerations. I suppose what I'm saying here is that EMV impacts not just testing certification, but it also impacts the business and operational aspects. It's all encompassing. It's wide-reaching. You have to look at your business review and decide how you're going to manage this change. So on acceptance, as I mentioned before, you're going to have to look at the brands, see if you're going to support all the brands and in which way you're going to do that. Is it going to be a phased approach? Are you going to hit one brand before the other? Or are you going to be brave and take them all on at the same time? The technology that you're going to be using in terms of acceptance, is it going to be contact or contactless at the point of interaction? How fraud and technology will be managed? Obviously something that we've mentioned before in terms of security. How your existing loyalty programs will be integrated at the point of interaction. Obviously, as I mentioned before, in terms of reviewing the project plan from end to end, do this before you start. We've noticed that in some implementations, decisions that were made early on, things that weren't taken into consideration early on, do have huge impacts later on and down the stream. Confirming the compatibility of business decisions and brand rules. That goes hand in hand, I suppose, with the level 2 kernel and the configuration that you've selected. That can really drive a lot of your business decisions, because if you select a kernel and as an example, the CVM capabilities of that kernel are only X, Y, and Z. That really kind of gives you a view of what you're going to be looking at. If you go for a kernel with capabilities that support absolutely everything, I suppose in some instances people will say, well, it gives us better choice. It does, but then it also gives you more complexity because you're going to be certifying for a hell of a lot more. There's no right or wrong answer here. It's more a case of selecting or being involved in the selection process for the types of kernels and configurations that best suits your needs and your customers' needs. And then, of course, the big one, there are many more rules around chip. I think you've been bombarded with this statement throughout this whole day. I don't want to have to hark on it again, but it's very true. Okay, so types of terminals. Now, Umesh had a lovely slide in terms of showing all the different terminal types, PALs, ATMs, touched upon integrated. Those are the ones that are on the far left, standalone terminals. Those would be the ones that are really aimed at the small merchants, the models that you've seen all over the place. Those are not really of huge concern to us because a lot of the big acquirers have already certified these products, are in the process of certifying these products, and they are relatively straightforward. Okay, and I'll say relatively in a manner of not really pushing that it's easy. The middle solution, sorry, the far right solution, a fully integrated terminal. These are to be used, or generally we see these in medium to large merchants. The kernel is the cash machine or within the back end. These solutions give you lots of flexibility, but the big con, obviously, is that the level one, level two certification may be required for you to build and install a kernel, okay? And that would be a huge amount of work. So, the focus and what we're looking at in terms of you guys as an audience is really the semi-integrated solutions in the middle. So, these are to be used for small to medium merchants, potentially. They use pauses and pin pads incorporating the kernels, connected to cash machines, as an example, and these are the most common solutions that we see. Sometimes these are deemed as IPOS or integrated terminals. The pros here are that the kernels are already certified by the terminal vendors, so it's a case of selecting what you need, what matches your requirements. They're the least complex solutions in terms of selecting. But they give you limited flexibility in terms of what you can achieve. So this slide is really talking about all the different phases that there are within a project overview. Some of this is going to take place initially. You're going to do your project setup. You're going to harness all the elements that make up the solution, be it in-house or be it that you know components that you buy from outside your environment. You're going to be doing your testing, conducting those tests, and then reporting these issues. And this is, as we said before, iterative in terms of the conducting tests and the reporting results phases. This is really your learning opportunity and where you obtain a lot of information so that your merchant certification project can go swiftly and successfully. So what we say is most time is spent during those phases of conducting the tests and reporting the results. And it's worthwhile spending most of your time during those phases because that's what we're saying in terms of the pre-certification phase. That's where you iron out your issues, you understand the impacts, you make those fixes, and then when everything and all the ticks are in the boxes, then you tackle the actual certifications. Okay, so best practices. Ensuring you have selected a terminal with an EMVCO level 1 kernel that is still or recently approved, level 2 kernel that is still or recently approved, or a contactless approval if applicable. ensuring that it's correctly configured to match the merchant and business needs, and ensuring that you have selected a device that has all the relevant PCI and brand approvals. Now, what you'll see is for many of the brands, okay, these are prerequisites. You will have to have this in place before you go to the brand certification anyway. I'm not going to go into too much detail because I'm sure Derek is going to have some lovely slides on this. But I will say one thing. Configuration is very important. And understanding that, as per Aidan's slide on the EMV kernel, the wrapper, and the configuration, configuration is extremely important. Just because you select a kernel that is level 2 approved, when I say kernel, I'm sticking to the level 2, the software side, that is EMV level 2 approved, has capabilities that are approved by EMVCo. When you come to your configuration of your application, you've got to ensure that you don't change or alter the settings that have been set or the capabilities of that EMVCo level 2 configuration. Now, EMVCo have published a couple of documents to give you guidance. There is a document, a very, very good document, which helps and assists you in identifying which of those capabilities is deemed a major deviation and which one is deemed a minor deviation. So these are elements that can be not supported or altered in the minor configuration, category. And it's well worth noting that there are these documents out there to assist you. Because invariably, during lots of implementations we've seen, a lot of clients will come across a specific test that they need to try and meet the pass criteria, and they'll notice that they're not going to be able to do that. But if they don't manage to meet that pass criteria, they're not going to finish the certification, and they're not going to have their letters of approval issued to them. So it's worth understanding, considering that. There's also another document that EMVCo publishes regarding hidden functions. Again, another one that a lot of your colleagues around the world have used and taken into consideration when they're producing these solutions. And my example there is CVM capabilities. So a big no-no that we've seen is a lot of people will say, right, well, I've picked a product. It supports online, offline, and no CVM, but at my application level, I'm going to switch off the support for no CVM. Okay, so you can't do that. That's basically what we're saying. If the product has been EMV level 2 certified, that's the configuration that you need to continue through your own configuration in terms of terminal capabilities. So that bit at the beginning of that slide is explaining those two documents that are available, TA11 and TA31. The names of those documents for anyone that needs to know. Okay, now I'm going to be talking about some examples of things that we see day in, day out on projects and implementations and certifications that come through in our general direction, projects that I'm involved in. Understanding fallback from chip to mag stripe and understanding that this will happen. You know, you're going to have things like technology fallback, and then you're going to have what somebody else phrased as accidental fallback. So understanding that in such cases there will be no field or data element 55 sent in authorization messages, because obviously there is no chip data, so why would you send any of that DE55 or data element 50 field 55. The POS entry mode also needs to reflect that it's a fallback. So you can't just continuously say that, well, you know, the initiation of the transaction was chip, so I process it as a fallback, I'm going to highlight that it was a chip transaction. That's incorrect. You'll need to highlight that however you've transmitted that transaction onward to the acquirer, then onto the networks, you have to be able to identify that as being a true fallback transaction. And then finally, the terminal needs to display elements to the user to indicate what the user needs to do. Simple things, but remember, if the chip's not going to, in some cases, sorry, for fallback, if the chip transaction isn't going to take place, we're going to expect you to say things like, please remove card and swipe card. You know, there is going to be an additional step sometimes that people are going to have to take to ensure that that transaction takes place. So it's understanding the dialogue, the terminal displays, all need to reflect a nice, simple user, simple and easy way for a user to understand what it is that they need to do. I've put this one up here because this was something that I noticed in an implementation I was involved in not long ago. And I was a bit surprised because it was something that I hadn't envisaged or seen before. And unfortunately, it was here in the US. So I thought, well, it would be a great example to give to you guys. And that's the idea behind the PAM. And that's the fact that within a chip transaction or using a card as the mechanism, you have to be aware that there are three areas now where PAN data is stored. So, first one is on the magstripe, which you're aware of, you know, and you know how to handle. The second is in a tag deemed 5A, which is the chip PAN. And thirdly, there is another tag which is the track to equivalent data, which is tag 57. Now, this mistake, which I noticed, which was to populate that field or DE02 in the ISO authorization message with the incorrect PAN. What was happening was the customer was reading the data and using the PAN from the magstripe and processing the rest of the transaction as chip. And you've got to remember that the PAN that is on the track 2, on the magstripe track 2, may not necessarily match the PAN that is going to be on the chip. And that's especially true when you're talking about multi-application cards. Okay? Because remember, you're going to have a card that could potentially have two applications residing on that one chip. You're only going to have one magstripe that sits on the magstripe. If the customer selects the other application that's not the master application that's encoded on the track 2, you've got to ensure that you're processing using the correct PAN. Understanding that there are multi-application cards out there, if you support more than one application, then your terminal must present what the terminal and card support to the user and allow them to select this. This is obviously going to be new, but be aware that you've got to look at, in terms of screen displays, you know, fonts, simple things like fonts. Came across a project not a long time ago, where the font size was huge on the screen of this device. So when a multi-application card was presented to this, it skewed off screen. Only the first five or six characters were displayed and the rest went off. And this specific testing that we were doing was to look at applications with quite a long name. So that application wasn't displayed on the screen, it didn't meet the pass criteria, and it needed to be fixed. So consider what's going to be appearing on the screen, and also consider your terminal receipts and any brand requirements which will normally mandate that the AID is displayed or printed on that receipt. Any application label is required, and then of course the usual PAN truncation that you already do for magstripe that will still be required for you to do in the EMV world. So that might be a surprise to some people. They may say, well, I didn't actually think that this impacts receipts, printed receipts. It does. It absolutely impacts everything. Other common issues, this was, I think, my last slide, so I just decided to chuck it all in here. Okay. issues to be aware of, 9F33 terminal capabilities. For some of the brands, this is now mandatory. Previously, it wasn't. Now you have to send this data. It's a requirement. Be aware of it. A nice one, 5F34, the application PAN sequence number. This is something that we've seen time and time again, where the PAN sequence number on the chip, there is no PAN sequence number. It's omitted. Okay, but what people are still sending in terms of the authorization messages is that they're still populating data element 23 or field 23 with a fictitious value, or they zero populate it. Okay, so the rule there is, if it doesn't exist on the card, why are you sending it? Field or data element 22 and the terminal type. This goes back to the conversation we had earlier and the question we had regarding the ENV terminal type. Ensure that you populate this field with the correct value of the ENV terminal type that you're certifying for, as per the ENV code certification. Unpredictable number, being static. We've seen this a few times. It's unpredictable. It should be different each time. But we've seen a lot of instances where people are just keeping this static and providing this in their card to terminal logs, which are reviewed obviously during the certification process. Mentioned receipts already. CA public keys. Now these are the keys that are given by the brands for the insertion into your terminals. Okay, so that you can use the test tools to be able to generate the transaction to see if you can match the criteria that is expected at the certification phases. A lot of the times, basic simple issues, SDA failures, for example, will occur because people are not injecting the correct keys into their terminals when they're doing their certification. If you do buy tools, and you're going to buy tools when you do your certification, all of these tools have manuals. They mimic a lot of the detail that is in the good documentation that comes from the brand. And there's always going to be a section with the CA public keys. Just pay attention to when you're injecting those, because it could cause havoc. It could cause you a lot of time trying to work out, why is my TVR setting this bit and byte? I don't understand why the transaction isn't matching the criteria, isn't progressing as it should. And a lot of the times it'll be something very simple that there's a key missing. Another simple one was the country code. Probably not so applicable here, because your currency code and country code being the same is quite useful. In other places, it's not as simple, and that does cause issues. Surcharging, be aware that sometimes, in some types of certifications, you're going to be hitting and you're going to be using simulators that are going to require you to use specific transaction amounts. So if you have your surcharging switched on, you won't actually be able to achieve the amounts that are specified in the pass criteria of the test. So just be aware of that. The brands are very flexible in terms of allowing you to switch this element off, because at the end of the day, it isn't really impacting on the certification that they're trying to achieve. This is something that you can test after to ensure that surcharging, for example, is complementary and doesn't affect your applications as you go further. And then finally, my last point about error messages on screen. About 8 months ago, I was doing a certification and there was an error. It was an expected error, but the chip failed. The system prompted a huge error message on the screen to say something like system error ICX49.ZZR3 reject, system error, please abort. And I looked at them and said, is this what you're going to roll out into production? And they said, yeah, why? What's wrong with that? And I said, if I was a customer and I saw that, I'd be worried. I really would. I wouldn't know what to do. I mean, fair enough, you may have a prompt on there to say remove your card, but I would be starting to think, is my card being affected? Has it been affected? Am I under investigation? Can I leave the country? It's scary what people use as error messages, and a lot of what's already been done in lots of different parts of the world is in stuff like the EMV code manuals and published in the brand documentation. Even the acquirers have this. Typical error message that you can display. Why reinvent the wheel? Use what's there. It's there to help you, to assist you, to reduce what you have to do. And it's a good basis to sort of, you know, to use that. Thank you.